The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
If instead Putin doubles down, then so shall we, further ratcheting up economic pressure and supporting Ukraine with finance.
Sanctions have to be as powerful as they can possibly be. We will be pushing the government to go further and faster.
We could have a massive miscalculation and we will then be in a full-scale war across the globe.
You're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Ewan Potts.
And good afternoon, I'm Caroline Hepker. Now, coming up on today's programme, we'll speak to the Conservative MP for Wellingborough, Peter Bone. And as a windfall tax on energy company profits is mooted, we'll interview the industry body Offshore Energies UK.
It's a grey day in London today. Beyond the weather, the Cabinet Office has confirmed that Number 10 has now received copies of Sue Gray's report into lockdown rule-breaking at Downing Street. Environment Secretary George Eustace has been doing the rounds on the morning programmes. He says that the boundary between what was acceptable and what wasn't got blurred, and that was a mistake.
Meanwhile, facing Keir Starmer in the Commons at Prime Minister's questions, Boris Johnson is expected to make a statement to the House about this long-awaited report. This evening, then, he'll address backbench Tory MPs at the 1922 committee. But something else, of course, for the government to address, the soaring cost of living, a day after the energy regulator said that bills will rise by another 40% in October, Johnson says that he's preparing new measures to help. Policies could be announced later this week as Downing Street tries to move on from Partygate.
Well, let's discuss today's big issues with our first guest, Peter Bone, Conservative MP for Wellingborough. Peter, thanks so much for joining us on Bloomberg Westminster. Now, Downing Street staff told the BBC's Panorama programme of regular wine time Fridays and of parties going on so late that some people ended up staying in Downing Street all night. Do you not think that the blame for all of this egregious rule breaking just has to lie with the Prime Minister?
Well, I don't think that. I do know, because it's just come up on the screen in the House of Commons, that in 1 hour and 25 minutes, the Prime Minister will be making a statement in the House on the report. I haven't seen the report. It hasn't yet been published. And I'm happy to wait until I see the report to find out what happened in Downing Street. But, of course, we know from a very extensive investigation by the police that Boris wasn't at what people have been calling parties in Downing Street.
Okay, but he was fined by the police for at least one instance.
Yeah, that fine related to him walking into where he thought he was going to have a meeting, and some surprised him with a birthday cake in a Tupperware package, and he was there for 9 minutes, and the police said, well, that actually wasn't working, so therefore we're going to slap a fine. But nobody would suggest seriously that that was a party.
OK, so what about the photographs that were all over the front pages that ITV got of glass in hand, lots and lots of bottles? I mean, everybody in the country has seen those photographs of the Prime Minister. That's surely hugely damaging.
Well, the photograph that published was quite pixelated in many respects, but you could see the Prime Minister's red box where was from which the Prime Minister does his work. His explanation was he walked past the room, there was a work event going on, somebody was leaving, and he went in for a few minutes, and only for a few minutes, and spoke and left. And the investigation by the police cost £500,000, had 12 detectives on it, and went over many weeks. And they decided clearly that that was not a party that the Prime Minister attended. So I'm very happy to accept the view of the police.
What sort of reception do you think the Prime Minister will get from backbench Tory MPs this evening? We do speak to, you know, a number of Conservatives on the programme, and some I think are more concerned than perhaps you are. What do you think will be the consensus as to the PM's behaviour?
Well, the overwhelming view of the Conservative members of Parliament is to support the Prime Minister, but everyone's interested to know from the Sue Gray report what was actually happening in Downing Street when the Prime Minister wasn't about. There were some parties apparently going on when the Prime Minister wasn't there. And who was actually responsible for running the day-to-day affairs in Parliament, and what action is going to be taken against those. So I think that's the thing that the report will tell us. And I don't think that will reflect on the Prime Minister, but it might well reflect on the people who are running the day-to-day operations in Downing Street. But I'm speculating. I promise not to speculate on this report. So I've only got less than an hour and a half to go, so perhaps I ought to wait until it comes out.
Okay, well, just a couple of points. So Downing Street is still going to end up being the most fined address in the UK for lockdown parties. And there does seem to be, doesn't there, some level of anger in terms of, you know, as you say, the staff running the day-to-day operations, the more junior people involved in government versus, you know, the more senior leadership, including the Prime Minister. Just as there is a kind of rift and some anger across the nation about whether rules were being adhered to as closely, you know, in Downing Street as they were perhaps in people's homes and offices across the country. That there's a real divide here, and it's about taking personal responsibility, surely.
Well, first of all, on the second one, I think long ago the public's moved on to the grave issues that are facing the country, not least the war in Europe. Unbelievable war in Europe at this time. The economic crisis that we and other European nations have got, the problem of illegal crossings from France by migrants, and they're looking for the government to solve those problems. They've long past worried about these events in Downing Street. However, for us in Downing Street, for us in Westminster, it's very important to know who was in charge of the day-to-day running of Downing Street, and why did they allow these parties to occur? I mean, that shouldn't have happened. And that's the key issue. And I say I won't speculate, so let's wait until the report. But I think that's what people will be reacting to later on today. But as for the Prime Minister, he should be judged on how he's handled the running of the country. And I think if you look at the local government elections in England anyway, particularly outside of London, we did very well against the Labour Party. So I think there's a, you know, what we talk about sometimes in the media and what people are talking about in the high street in Wellingborough can be totally different.
Well, I think it was a bit of a mixed picture in the elections, but there will be another test very soon. Of course, we have two by-elections, one in a marginal seat, Wakefield, and one in a very safe seat in Devon. Do you think the Tories are going to hold both those elections?
Well, I certainly hope they do, but by-elections mid-term are normally when the government in power gets voted against. So it would be very... I mean, that's a difficult backdrop for any by-election, but I think we've got two good candidates, and sometimes these by-elections are not based on the area, but trying to just send a message to the government that you want them to do this or that. So we'll see. But I should be up in Wakefield on Friday and Saturday to help our candidate.
Okay, so that on the by-elections. Well, and no doubt those voters will also be thinking about the cost of living. There is noise now that the Chancellor will enact some kind of windfall tax on energy companies, either with or without the kind of power generators. Are you comfortable with that?
I've never necessarily been against a windfall tax. facts, because there are extraordinary circumstances occasionally when they're justified. I have to say, though, energy companies pay a windfall tax every year because they pay 40% of their profits in tax. So there's automatically a higher tax rate for them. But what's important is that the Chancellor come forward, and I hope sometime this week, with measures that are going to help people, especially those that are less well off, with their energy bills.
Ofgem say we're going to see a 40% hike in those bills in October. Mm. It's reported that a number of Conservative MPs are unhappy at more taxpayers' money being thrown at this undoubted problem. Are you one of those Conservative MPs who's a bit cautious about that?
I haven't actually heard that. I think from across, if you like, across the Tory party, whether it's from the right or the left, and I'm from the right, there is support for giving those people who are the least well off support. I think that's always been a Conservative principle, that we look after those people who really need help. So I think the trick, if that's the right word, for the Chancellor, is to make sure whatever he does reaches the right people and that it's done in a sensible way. And I'm hope, as I say, we're on Wednesday. Obviously, today Parliament rises tomorrow, so I hope tomorrow the Chancellor comes forward with those plans. But we have to act, because, you know, 40% rise in energy prices for someone, you know, it's not something you can avoid. You have to pay those costs. So we should be helping people who are less well off.
There could be another big kind of cloud over the summer, which is the RMT union talking about the largest strike in rail history. They had close to 90% in the 40,000 balloted members voting in favour of strike action. There's a real danger that it could be the first of many, that this could be a hugely chaotic rail summer just when we're trying to come back from the virus.
Yes, I think it's irresponsible by the rail unions, but they will do what they will do, and I think the public will react against the unions if they go on strike. It does, after going, first of all, we had the dreadful pandemic, and that hit the railways really hard, of course, and now we come out of that, and then we have this terrible war in Europe.
But the unions want fair pay. The argument that the RMT is making is that they want fair pay and no redundancies. I mean, that may gain quite a lot of sympathy with squeezed households in the country.
We shall see. I don't think it will. I don't think that's the case at all. I think it's wholly irresponsible at this time to be going on strike.
Do you think there's a danger that there'll be more strikes as the cost of living really starts to bite in lots of other sectors?
I don't think there'll be strikes, but what's got to happen is that we manage this crisis, and clearly there would have been a crisis with COVID alone, but having the war in Europe as well, and I mean, we haven't really talked about it, but actually that is the most serious thing. I mean, people are dying in Europe and the war's going on. I mean, rightly so, the Prime Minister has led the European response in support of Ukraine, and Ukraine has to be supported, and we have to end the war. But that might be many, many months away, and people are dying at this time. And to be honest, when people are going to spend all day talking about a party that happened perhaps 2 years ago, I think my constituents will say, well, you're not concentrating on the right thing. But
hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon.
They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Well, let's have a look at what else is making news in the world of politics then. So price rises for the poorest households in the UK will reach 14% later this year. That is twice the inflation rate of wealthier individuals, according to the Institute for Fiscal Studies. Those figures add to pressure, of course, on the government and on Chancellor Rishi Sunak to extend more help to households.
Well, Britain faces the threat of a national train strike and a transport meltdown this summer. Members of the RMT balloted some 40,000 rail workers. Almost 90% approved industrial action in a dispute over pay and job cuts. A spokesman for the Department for Transport told the BBC it was hugely disappointing and premature. The RMT wants a guarantee of no compulsory firings together with a new pay deal as household costs spiral.
And, of course, the sale of Chelsea Football Club is being approved to a US investor. Todd Bowley has got the nod from the government. So the clearance now of this £4.25 billion sale by the Russian billionaire Roman Abramovich ends months of uncertainty for all the fans and the staff of the London club.
Well, Pfizer has today said that it will sell its entire portfolio of brand name drugs at cost in as many as 45 lower income countries. The initiatives to start in five African nations with drugs for cancer, rare illnesses, inflammatory conditions and infectious diseases. The plan is one of the most comprehensive drug access programs ever announced by a large pharma company.
Okay, so some interesting stories to consider. But let's turn our attention now to electricity generators, because apparently they could escape windfall taxes that are being considered by the government. Energy firms are coming under pressure for posting huge profits whilst customers pay rising bills, deepening the cost of living crisis in Britain. And I'm pleased to say that joining us on the programme is Ross Dornan, who is Market Intelligence Manager at Offshore Energies UK. Ross, you represent, therefore, the oil and gas and offshore wind firms, off the coast of Scotland and across the UK. So I'm very interested to get your view on this live issue. So power generators may not be included, but it looks like the profits of oil and gas firms may be taxed. What sort of level of taxation do you think the industry is expecting? Have you got a ballpark figure?
Good morning. It's good to be with you in the show. I think just to set some context, this is an awful situation right up and down the country where so many people are really struggling with the cost of living situation, which has largely been driven by high energy prices around the world. So rightfully, we have a focus on affordability at the moment. And our industry is helping to contribute towards this situation in terms of overcoming these challenges. We're already paying significantly more tax as a sector. We're taxed at a rate of 40% as a headline rate, which is more than double that across other parts of the economy. And within this current regime, we are paying more tax, about £8 billion this year. That's £20 to £25 million a day in taxes, which is double what we paid last year and 20 times what we paid the year before that because of the high prices and the extra profits that companies are making. So we're paying more tax, we're increasing investments, and we're also providing valuable jobs to 200,000 people up and down the country. So alongside the focus on affordability, though, We need to have a think about, a real careful think about energy security and sustainability into the future. And to achieve those aims, we're going to need to see massive investment across the economy. And the government's Office for Budget Responsibility think that actually something in the region of £1 trillion is going to need to come from the private sector in the coming decades. And to attract that level of investment, companies and investors have to have confidence in the UK. And I think knee-jerk fiscal changes like what's being proposed won't be positively viewed by investors. And that could, I think, in time undermine the confidence that investors have in their ability to want to work in the UK economy and help develop the energy supply and emissions reduction systems that we're going to need to see for the decades to come.
Ross, it would be fair to say, though, that there has been an enormous windfall for the sector. That's, you know, the tax is called that for a reason. You know, at the back end of last year, Brent crude was at $75 a barrel. We're now at $115 a barrel. And that is money not for the investment you've done. It's not money for hard work. It's just it just happens to be a windfall that the sector has landed in the sector's landed at the sector's lap.
Some of our member companies, you mentioned some there, have reported higher profits in recent months, the last 6 months or so. We have to, though, recognise a couple of things around that. It's within the UK, these companies, you know, the profits are reporting are generally global in nature, and the UK is often only a small proportion of those businesses, maybe 5% of their global oil and gas production coming in the UK. So the level of profits we're talking about are largely being taxed in other parts of the world already. And we also have to think about the really difficult time this industry's had in the last 5 years. We've come off the back of really low commodity prices, where the UK industry has been marginal at best. And some of the household names who have reported large profits in the last 6 months, just back in 2020, posted some of the largest corporate losses ever seen in UK corporate history. So we have to take that into account when we're looking at company positions. But also, as these companies are making more money because of the way the tax regime works in the UK oil and gas industry, they are paying more taxes. They're paying more than double this year than what they paid last year because they're making more money. That is a windfall coming to Treasury. And over the next 5 years, they're actually predicted to pay something like £13 billion more than the previous forecast because of the higher commodity prices. That's a windfall that's already coming to Treasury that the government should really think about how they want to direct that to help ease the cost of living crisis.
No, and I understand. But look, the conversation, though, is that a windfall tax may well be imminent. That seems to be the reporting around this issue. So I can understand that the industry has become much sharper and, I think in some senses better at managing expectations and trying to put across the industry's view. But if a windfall tax is to come, what kind of ballpark figure do you think would be the kind of number that Treasury might be looking at? Is it 10, 20% of annual profits? Is it a turnover tax? I mean, what would be most difficult for the industry to swallow?
I think it's really difficult to say what's going to come. As you've mentioned, there's been increasing reports that a change is coming. Our position is still that it's not a good policy move. What we need to see right now is thoughtful policy, which helps address the current cost of living crisis, because it does need support. But also having that focus on the future. You know, if we undermine the investor confidence through changes to the fiscal regime, how can companies who are looking to spend hundreds of billions of pounds in the UK economy in the coming years have confidence on the conditions that they're investing in? So that I think that's the real challenge that we're facing, the fundamental challenge. You need thoughtful policy, which takes all of these considerations into account when we're looking to create the energy system of the future, which will help address affordability alongside our energy supply security and alongside the need to reduce emissions, which our industry is fully committed to. So I think, Ross, when the government are looking to make decisions, these are the things that really need to be taken into account to make sure they don't undermine the confidence that companies have in the UK system.
Ross, are you happy at the support you've had and some of the rhetoric that comes from politicians at Westminster and indeed at Holyrood? We do often speak to MPs and MSPs who are quite negative about more drilling in the North Sea.
Yeah, so what we've seen actually from the UK government in the last year or so is actually supportive messaging and policies towards this sector. I think they understand the important role of the oil and gas sector in the UK. It provides 75% of all the energy that we use on a day-to-day basis in the UK. And as we even look to the future, it's going to continue to have a really important role because, you know, it's, the oil and gas sector is so ingrained in our everyday lives. It's 33 million petrol and diesel cars on the road. It's 40% of our electricity from gas. It's 85% of our homes having gas heating. And what we see from policymakers in the UK government is they understand this. They understand the role that the oil and gas industry has in helping to really drive the UK economy. So we recognise that support. You know, they've worked with us in the North Sea Transition Deal, and all this will continue to work with us in a positive way. And the fiscal regime is such an important part of the investment proposition that companies that work within the UK industry take to international investors to make them want to come and spend their money here.
Do you think there are going to be more barrels extracted out of the North Sea this year than last year?
So last year we did see some issues with production. We've seen some extended shutdowns that were planned, and we've seen some issues that were hangover really from the lack of investment that we've seen within COVID. So, you know, we are hopeful that production performance will be better this year. Companies are looking to respond to the UK government's challenge to try and increase production in line with the challenges with international markets and trying to limit imports of energy from Russia. But it's something that does take some time. You know, the projects that companies are looking to put in place can take some years. But there is some things that we are looking to do that might be able to increase our output by maybe something like 5% across this year. But it's really when we look forward is the real opportunity to manage our output in line with how we expect demand to evolve in the UK. And the decisions that are going to impact on the supply in 5 years' time are being made now. And so we need to make decisions now that are going to impact the future in a positive way.
Ross, you've talked about thoughtful policy as what you want to see out of Westminster. What do you think that would be right now? Would it be increasing gas storage? Is it about insulating homes? Is it about building more onshore wind power? Or, as you say, is it about those decisions, how many barrels are extracted from the North Sea?
So I think it's a range of things which focus on the here and the now and focus on the energy system of the future. As you probably expect me to say, I think a thoughtful policy move would be to fully recognise and understand the impact that a change to the tax regime might have on investor confidence. But when we look, to the future, there are things. You know, there's some regulatory streamlining which is required. We want to see a massive increase in wind power. We want to see creation of hydrogen systems, carbon capture systems, and oil and gas systems all working together. They'll have different regulatory regimes.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Ron Kruszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, let's face it, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. There's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.